All right, we are back for another season preview edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast, and we are joined to preview the Orlando Magic by Eddie Rivera. Eddie, what's up?
How's it going, Nate? How you doing?
Really good. In scheduling these season previews, I kind of had this whole spreadsheet where I set out when I wanted to do each one, and my criteria for doing one early or doing one late was if there was something I really wanted to learn about the team as the preseason went on, kind of see how the rotation was going to start shaking out, that sort of thing, see how they looked in preseason, I scheduled teams towards the end. And the Magic were one of the ones that I scheduled towards the end because I felt like, all right, I really want to know who is going to be playing for this team and how Scott Skiles is going to start doing the rotation in preseason. So this is one of the more intriguing teams to me of the preview series that we've done.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely eager to see this season take shape. As you said, there's a lot of moving parts, both from the coaching staff and also with some of the new guys coming in. C.J. Watson, Mario Hezonja, obviously come to mind, but Scott Skiles being the biggest piece of the pie, just trying to figure out how he's going to shape the team and mold it to the way he wants to see it played in a regular season. So I think preseason has showed a little bit, but I think obviously as the regular season kicks off, we'll get to know a little bit more about what the team's personality will be like this season.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about last year, first of all. This is a team that has a lot of young talent just since they've been drafting pretty low. It's only been 3 years, essentially, since Dwight Howard left that they've kind of been out of the playoffs, but that's a long time for a rebuilding project. They've now gotten some intriguing young pieces, but they're also, despite those pieces and a guy like Vucevic, who was even getting some all-star talk, they really struggled last year on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, they did. And I think that was a bit of a surprise to me personally, because I think the expectation last year at least was, even if they're not going to make the playoffs, you would like to see some progression take place with some of the individual pieces and hopefully collectively have that be more wins on the win total, but that never happens. They got off to a pretty quick start last season. I think the one game that really stood out to me, especially now knowing how good the Warriors were, was when they went to Golden State and nearly beat them on the road, if not for a last second Steph Curry shot.
That West Coast road trip was interesting to me, right? Because they started off the season, as I recall, pretty poorly. And then they went on that West Coast trip and were very competitive. I was at that Warriors game when Tobias Harris just let Steph pull up from three when they were the perfect quintessential, here's why you don't call a timeout, right? Like, they got in transition. Harris kind of forgot the situation that they were up to and let Steph shoot a three. And, they ended up losing by one. But as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong here because I haven't gone back and looked, but Vucevic was out for a lot of that time period when they were on the West Coast and actually playing really well. And then when he came back, they kind of nosedived again.
Yeah, he was out for a little bit, and Kylo Quinn stepped in and filled in admirably. I mean, Kylo Quinn's a very good player, so it was no surprise for Magic fans that followed the team closely to see him step right in and put on some good numbers. They just went on the West Coast road trip. I thought they played relatively well. Again, the Warriors game really stands out to me because it showed, at least in theory, what this potential can do when they start to figure it out. I mean, again, the Warriors won the title last season, and for the Magic to be one of the teams to basically put them on the ropes on their home floor, which was rare to see last season, said a bit about the talent on the roster, but for whatever reason, you just can never figure it out. And I think that's ultimately what cost Jacques Vaughn his job, because when you looked at the talent on the roster, yes, it was young, yes, it was inexperienced, but there was a talented group of guys that were a lot better than what the record indicated. And I think over time, Magic fans got frustrated with the direction of the team, got frustrated with Jacques Vaughn's inability to really coax out some of that potential, and he got axed, and they brought in James Borrego to try to do something, but I think everybody knew at that point that he was just going to be nothing more than a temporary fill-in until they went out for who they really wanted during the offseason. So, I think in terms of overall, just in terms of how last season went, You know, I'll rattle off some synergy stats for you. I mean, they were a bit of a disaster on both ends of the floor, especially on defense. They were second worst defending the roll man in pick and rolls. They were the worst defense in transition. They were just a mess.
Yeah, and that's pretty unacceptable, being the worst defense in transition with that young of a roster of guys who should have a lot of energy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the pick and roll especially was a big bugaboo for them, and I think that speaks to Vucevic's weaknesses, honestly, because, you know, obviously he's not going to be the guy that you can hedge and bring him out, you know, near half court. He's going to be a guy that you sag back, and so that it really allows teams to exploit that. And, you know, when you have a bunch of young guys trying to figure out rotations and how to figure out how to defend a pick and roll effectively, that's no surprise that they were second worst defending the roll man in pick and rolls per synergy. I think that just speaks to the youth and experience. And also just, I think Jock Vaughn's inability to really scheme around that team. I think one thing that stood out to me about last season was the fact that they regressed defensively, because the year prior in 2013-14, they were 17th in defensive efficiency. I mean, that's pretty decent, you know, right around the league average. And then they cratered to 24th last season. So I think that's...
Yeah, why did that happen? Because they didn't really have much of a change in personnel from those 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, they got Elfrid Payton, who... is a pretty good defensive point guard, at least in some respects. He's a rookie, but,
right,
you know, really has, like, amazing hands. Aaron Gordon is a guy who also a rookie, but still has some athleticism, some defensive versatility. So, yeah, why did they decline so much?
I think you got a point to Channing Frye. I think having him start at the power forward position and just be a massive sieve defensively, and his inability to really cover for Vucevic's weaknesses really, I think, started off the season pretty poorly, and then after that, I think it just dovetailed into the Magic trying to find a guy at the four that could really pair next to Vucevic that could, you know, again, make up for some of his weaknesses defensively. They tried Dedmon, they tried O'Quinn, and they weren't really able to find that guy that could really be a competent two-way piece, because obviously Channing Frye is a great shooter, but he struggled defensively, and obviously Vucevic is a, you know, poor defender at this point in time, and it's... If you have two guys that are poor defensively, it's hard to make something work in the front court. I'm sorry. So, you know, with Dedmon, even though he's a good defender, he's pretty much a sieve offensively because he can't really get you anything more than garbage buckets. So that was another example of a pairing not working. And then with O'Quinn, you know, they tried to spread him out a little bit, put him and play him at the three, around the 3-point line, just to try to spread that floor a little bit. But again, O'Quinn isn't much known for being a rim protector, even though he's a pretty smart defender in terms of IQ. So I think it really just came down to the Magic being unable to find a guy at the four to pair with Vucevic. And I think overall, Jock Vaughn's inability to really scheme effectively with the talent on the roster contributed to that regression, if you're looking at the holistic view of things.
Yeah, Frye is a center. I think really O'Quinn is a center.
Yep.
Defensively, and Frye... Also, it wouldn't be fair to him to not mention that he really had that sprained MCL at the start of the year last year, and that really, I thought, you know, he was wearing a big brace when he came back. He never really looked like himself, and throw that into now he's playing power forward instead of center like he did in Phoenix, where if he's playing center, he can really leverage his ability in the pick and roll. If he's playing power forward, then you just go small against him, and, you know, he's kind of powerless, and then he's going to give up a lot more on the other end than he's able to contribute on offense. So yeah, I mean, I think the lack, and then, you know, you've got kind of tweener guys like Gordon and like Tobias Harris, who, you know, if they're going to shift down, they sort of might have some defensive liabilities as well. And Harris at either forward position probably is a liability. So, you know, when you really go through it, despite some of the guys they have on this team, yeah, you can see how the defense did regress, and then offensively they just can't make a shot.
Yeah, they can't shoot. I think, again, just rattling off some synergy stats real quick, one of the good things that they were able to do was score on cuts. They were the second-best offense in the NBA last season, which is a bit of a surprise, but I think that speaks to, you know, Payton, Oladipo, and even Harris's ability to cut to the basket and score effectively. But on the flip side, they were the third-worst offense scoring off of screens and pick-and-rolls. So, you know, for as well as they could do scoring on cuts, you know, scoring off the screens was a bugaboo for them. And I think that speaks to just their inability to shoot, as you said, because a lot of those screen and curls, you know, the guys like J.J. Redick of the league that really thrive off of those type of sets, the Magic really had nobody that could run those sets and shoot. So You know, guys like Fournier, you know, guys like Harris that did improve a little bit from the perimeter last season were some of the few people that could shoot on the perimeter. But, yeah, overall as a team, there just wasn't much out there for them to score and score with efficiency and score with consistency. I'm sorry. So, yeah, I think the offense was a bit of a disaster. Again, I have to point a little bit of a blame to Doc Vaughn's inability to really try to coax out some sort of scheme that made the most sense for the roster. I think he started off playing really slow pace, you know, walking the ball up the court, really trying to ask these guys to execute in half court sets, and they just couldn't do it because one, they couldn't shoot, and B, or two, I'm sorry, you know, just their inability to spread the floor. I mean, they tried it with Channing Frye, you know, and he was able to score, but then he couldn't defend. So, you know, there was a bit of an issue there, and you know, Elfrid Payton can't shoot. Oladipo was getting better as a shooter, but still isn't seen as much more than an average shooter at best. Harris can shoot, but again, his inability to defend makes it tough for him to really find his best position. I think he's better as a four than a three. You know, and again, even though Vucevic can shoot, I think as you look at the team collectively, it's just not a lot of guys. When your best shooter is likely Vucevic and Frye, I think that speaks to a bit of an issue on the perimeter. In terms of who can really spread the floor. So, yeah, they had quite a bit of issues on offense. And I think Jock Vaughn tried to figure it out by playing at a faster pace midway through the season. He had those couple of stretch of games against the Bulls and the Rockets where the Magic poured points and were playing at an extremely high level and extremely high pace. But it wasn't going to last because, you know, they were really just giving up a lot of points on the defensive end. So, you know, I think Jock Vaughn tried to find a way that can make it work for the team offensively, and again, his inability to do that cost him his job. So I think Scott Skiles' task at this point is to try to find a way to get these guys to score in some way or fashion that can at least be enough, assuming that they improve defensively, to win games.
Yeah, you know, it's to me, a lot of their problem, it's just all of these guys, I think, can be pretty good in isolation, but it's just the fit is really a struggle with this team. And, you know, you think about their long-term future, right? I think that there are kind of two things that every team needs to some degree, and that's obviously superstar talent, and you wonder, despite the fact that there are all these pieces. Yeah, actually, let's start there. Who do you think among all the guys on this team has the most ability to become an all-star player, you know, Vucevic got some all-star talk. I think when you consider his defense that was a little far-fetched, but who do you think is the most likely of these guys to become an all-star? Cause that's obviously what they really need to get back into some kind of contention in these next few years.
Oladipo doesn't even need me to think about it any more than that. Victor Oladipo, I think, is going to be an all-star. I'll go out on a limb and say he will be. I'll throw out some stats for you. Last season, he averaged 17.9 points, 4.1 assists, 4.2 rebounds, and 1.7 steals at the age of 22. And he ended up being just the 17th guard to achieve those averages in a single season before his 23rd birthday. So that puts him in line with guys like Jrue Holiday, Russell Westbrook, Stephen Curry, Tyreek Evans, Chris Paul, Gilbert Arenas, Baron Davis, Kobe Bryant, Steve Francis, Allen Iverson, Kevin Johnson, Clyde Drexler, a guy named Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, and Magic Johnson. I think when you have Oladipo being that company at that young of an age, putting those type of numbers up, I think that bodes well for his outlook as being a potential all-star in this league. I think, honestly, he's going to be an all-star. I see it in the future. I think he has a chance to make a leap this season. I think all signs point to him continuing to project in that manner. Will he be a superstar? I think that's a little too much to expect from him, but will he be an all-star, a multiple all-star? I really do believe he will be. I think he has all the talent in the world to do so. He has the skill set to be an elite defender, as you know. He has the work ethic to really continue to improve on the offensive end. I think he really showed some good signs near the end of the season of really running those pick and rolls effectively, knowing how to read defenses, kind of the multiple layers. Having a good chemistry with Vucevic, you know, on those pick and pops and pick and rolls, and having good chemistry with Elfrid Payton, you know, being able to play off of him. So Yeah, I think the guy that's most likely to really develop in that type of player is Oladipo. I think aside from him, I think Vucevic does have all-star potential, but it just comes down to being able to improve defensively. I think when you look down the roster with guys like Elfrid Payton, I think he has a chance to be a special player as well. I saw a recent article at 538 where Neil Payne projected him to be an all-star caliber player in the next couple seasons based off of WARP. I think RPM, I'm sorry. So, you know, I think there's some guys on this roster that can turn into star players. Now, will that circumvent the fact that they don't have a bona fide superstar? I think that remains to be seen, but there definitely is some talent on the roster for these guys to really blossom into the type of star players that you need to rely on to really become an elite team.
Yeah, there really are a lot of guys, right? With Payton, Harris, Gordon, Hezonja. Like those guys, you could maybe say that there's a possibility that any of those guys, and even Vucevic as well, that any of those guys could maybe be an all-star in the future. But, and you know, although I don't think any of them really has superstar upside, maybe you could say Gordon, if he really kind of gets it offensively and improves his shot, which is looking much, much better based on Summer League. But and because he definitely has the physical tools to get to that level. I mean, he'll probably end up kind of more as like a Sean Marion type maybe, but that's still, you know, that's a Sean Marion's like a borderline Hall of Famer. If he gets to there, you can't complain. But yeah, it's the question though, to me is, all right, if you're going to be one of these teams that doesn't have superstars, but hey, we have all these good players, the pieces need to fit. And that is my real concern for this team is Payton can't shoot at all. Right. And so if Oladipo is going to be this kind of guy, you know, you mentioned a lot of names, guys who are kind of two guards, big ones, who have the ball in their hands a lot. Payton is a horrible fit with that because his guy is just not going to guard him and will just get in the way on Oladipo. If you're going to have a guy like Payton, he needs to be the main guy handling the ball because you have to at least guard the ball handler. Off the ball, he's a real problem. And then you have Vucevic, doesn't really protect the rim. Gordon, another guy who, you know, maybe he'll get there with his shooting, but I don't think is ever going to be like a really feared threat. Harris, another guy who maybe will get there, but isn't quite there yet from a shooting perspective. Even Oladipo, not really a spot-up guy either. So maybe Hezonja is the guy who can provide all the space for them. But even he is kind of, you know, a guy who likes to have the ball in his hands and kind of more of a gunner type maybe than just a straight-up like J.J. Redick, either shoot it or get the ball out of my hands, or Kyle Korver type. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, now, they're obviously not wedded to this roster. They have a lot of pieces. They can make trades to improve the fit, to be sure. But I really feel like these pieces don't fit at all right now, despite their individual talent. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think fit's still an issue. When looking at the roster and kind of just Hennigan's MO, I think he's still trying to figure out, you know, how these pieces can fit in theory, and which guys make the most sense moving forward to keep on the roster. I think at this point in time, you know, they just need to still figure it out. I think a lot of these guys are still very young, and I think it's a little too early to just, you know, put the stamp on a player and give him a certain reputation if he still has an opportunity to progress and improve as a player. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think when it comes to Payton, you know, can he become at least an average shooter? You know, if that is a possibility.
I am skeptical of that. When a guard, shoots 55% from the line, you know, I mean, and even looked very reluctant even taking 15-footers all last year. Granted, you know, that last year was his age 20 season, but I am really skeptical that he can ever get beyond kind of like a Rondo type of shooter where it's like he's only shooting as a last resort.
Right. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Payton. I mean, I know he's worked on his shot a lot in the offseason, and he worked to try to improve it. I mean, it's a fair point. Will he ever get to the point where it'll be even average? It remains to be seen. I do think Oladipo will progress into an above-average shooter. I do think his form, just the way he really works at it. Again, there was a bit of an uptick in his numbers last season. I think that he will get to that point. I think Harris as well. I think he did start to improve from three-point range last season, and I think that's still, in his cards to get to that point where he can be an above-average shooter. You know, but again, a lot of these guys are just still far away. And I think with Hezonja in particular, I know the Magic are really banking on him to be able to provide that floor spacing that starting lineup desperately needs. And Aaron Gordon is an interesting.
So you think of the long term starting lineup will have Hezonja in it because of you, and then so yeah, that's a good question, right? Who is? I mean, we talked about it for this year, but maybe it's even a better question because this is a team that's, you know, it's not going to be a contender this year or anything. Like, what do you see if you just have to make a starting lineup long-term out of the pieces on this roster? Like, what are you going with?
If it was me, it would likely be Payton, Oladipo, Hezonja, Gordon, and Vucevic. I think with Harris coming off the bench. I know Harris just got a monster contract, but again, the NBA salary cap is about to explode to ridiculous proportions.
I thought a lot of them matching on him too was basically we can't just let this asset get away.
Because
I agree with you. I think one of either Vucevic or Harris is going to have to either be a bench guy or is just going to have to get traded. That's kind of what I think of this for this long term.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm both high on Aaron Gordon, and I'm probably lower than the norm on Tobias Harris. You know, I'm high on Aaron Gordon because I really do think that he has the potential to not just be a Sean Marion type, but I think, you know, when you look at how Draymond Green really blossomed to a player last year. At the four, playmaking four, as Zach Lowe likes to say, a guy that can really punish defenders, in the post, but also spread the floor and then be a stout defender. I think, honestly, Aaron Gordon can become that type of player. I'm probably higher than most on him because of he's a freak. I mean, I've seen him in person. I've interviewed him. I've been close to just his physique, and he's just a monster, and he's only getting more. I mean, he's going to get older. He's going to continue to fill out his body. He's going to get, you know, more accustomed to being able to handle those, you know, power forwards. I think Aaron Gordon, if you look at his skill set and his potential, I mean, he flashed a little bit in summer league. You know, if he can turn into that Draymond Green type of player at the four, where he can at least be passable from the perimeter, but still punish guys in the posts and, you know, show some of that playmaking ability in the pick and roll. And then on defensive side, you know, being able to be a versatile guy that can guard both front court and back court players, I think that unlocks a lot of possibilities for the Magic and really makes it a little bit easier to deal with Vucevic's, defensive, deficiencies. As for Tobias Harris, I think, honestly, unless he dramatically improves as a defender, and I'm very skeptical of that, I just don't see him being a fit on the main, the starting lineup because, for as much as he can give you offensively, he takes that all back defensively. He's too slow for threes. He's still not strong enough for fours. And, you know, again, even though he can score.
Yeah, he can't protect the rim at all either.
He can't protect the rim. And I'm not a big fan of the way he plays offensively. He's too much of a, you know, ISO-based player where, you know, at this point in time, in this era where ball movement is praised. And, you know, it's nothing wrong with a guy getting his own shot near the end of the shot clock, but I think a lot of times, even in the flow of the offense and half-court sets, the ball just sticks way too much with Tobias Harris, and I think just having a team that needs to really exhibit ball movement to try to create some open shots for the guys that can shoot, or even just try to make some driving lanes for guys like Payton and Oladipo to get into the lane. You know, if you get a guy that throws the ball in and he, you know, see him jab step like Melo, I think that's just... it robs the very small creases in the defense where he can take advantage. So I think at best, if he could be a small ball power forward off the bench that he can just get you buckets, I honestly think that's his best role. I'm skeptical that Tobias Harris is a long-term fit with the team unless he dramatically improves our defense.
What do you think of the Skiles hire?
You know, when they first announced the hire, I was a little disappointed because it just seemed as if they were going after a guy that was a short-term fix, right? So at this point in time, you can understand Hennigan's point of view that, you know, it's been 3 years, as you said. It's about that time for this team to start making some progress. You know, are they going to take a shortcut a little bit and hire a guy as a short-term fit rather than someone that can grow with the team and be someone that you can really, you know, build with? You know, so that was kind of my reticence with the hiring. I just felt as if we know how the story is going to end with Scott Skiles. He's been fired everywhere he's been. And
yeah, I mean, it's basically like you put retread in the dictionary, like his photo shows up. And it's not to diminish what the job that he's done. I mean, I think he's had some performances in his career that are like coach of the year worthy. But yeah, he just runs out of steam.
Yeah, you just know how the story ends. He's a lifetime 500, coach. Again, I think just given where the franchise wants to be, I was a little skeptical of the hire. I still am, but I have warmed to the idea that, you know, listen, for as much as Jacques Vaughn did well to develop the players, because I really do think he doesn't get enough credit in that respect, he was too positive. He was too much of a nice guy. And I think over time, you know, the Magic, I think that's part of the reason why they just didn't make the progress that they needed to make, because there was no accountability. You know, it didn't come from him. It didn't really come from anybody in the coaching staff. I think everybody incubated the players into just really worrying more about their development, their progression, rather than, you know, the wins and losses. And I think now bringing in like a guy like Scott Skiles, that's a taskmaster and a guy that can really come in and, you know, light a fire under these guys. You know what? I think that's what this team needs. And I think in the short term, I think having a guy like Skiles that can come in and really, you know, inject a bit of discipline to the roster, I think is worthwhile. But again, I'm skeptical that, you know, he'll last long enough for, you know, the fruits of his labor to really show. So I think in this instance, I think you see him as nothing more than a stepping stone coach to the guy that, if the Magic are going to become an elite team and become a championship contender, it likely isn't going to be under Scott's. He's probably going to get them to that point, but then the next coach in is probably going to be the coach that takes them there. As you know, for example, Steve Kerr. You know, Mark yeah. Jackson took the Warriors probably as far as he could, and then Steve Kerr came in and finished the job. So I think that will likely be what happens to Skiles. I think he'll progress the team, he'll improve, and then he'll get fired. And then they'll bring in somebody else, and likely that coach will not finish the job, get them to where they need to be as a contender.
Yeah, I have also somewhat warmed to it, just because you make the assumption that they're going to get better on defense, and that is something that Scott Skiles does have a very proven track record with. But on the other hand, my feeling on that sort of thing is, look, you have a young team, you know what Scott Skiles is. Why not take a chance on someone who's a really well-regarded assistant? Because I don't believe that we really, just as kind of an NBA society, have the ability to know for sure who's going to be a good coach and a bad coach before they come in. I mean, you guys have reputations, blah, blah, but for every guy who had a good reputation that you remember who came in and did well, there's a guy who kind of flopped. So why not at least take a chance on a guy who's a little bit less known and just see if he can be, you know, a great coach in this league, which I don't think ultimately Scott Skiles is going to be. But especially this team with the kind of fit issues that they may have with their core pieces, I think it would have been nice to take a chance on a guy and see, you know, maybe someone with a different style than Vaughn, but see if they can find really just an awesome guy. So, but let's get into more to this year now. I mean, we've been talking a lot about kind of the long-term future of the franchise, and I think that's really interesting. But what about this year? What is your starting lineup for this year if you are Scott Skiles, and do you think that will differ from what the actual starting lineup will be?
Yeah, for sure. And just to go back to your previous point about, you know, why didn't the Magic hire, you know, another maybe an up-and-coming assistant to hopefully lead this team to where they need to go. Honestly, I think it's because they got burned by Jacques Vaughn. I think the fact that they took that risk, they decided to try to hire that up-and-coming assistant. You know, Jacques Vaughn was very highly regarded coming out of San Antonio when the Magic hired him. I mean, I think a lot of people around the league thought that, hey, this guy's going to be a star. I mean, Popovich was extremely high on Vaughn being a great coach, and it didn't pan out. And I think when you look at the organizational mindset, especially coming from Alex Martins, you know, who's the president of the team, you know, at a certain point, the Magic need to see progress, and if they're not going to see that progress with an up-and-coming assistant, they likely just wanted to go with a guy that they knew was going to get results right away, and that ended up being the Skiles hire. So, you know,
Hennigan, right? Because normally, and I was surprised to see him extended, frankly, because I at least personally have been a little puzzled by a lot of his moves, despite the fact that they kind of have this stable of young talent. I thought they did great in the Dwight trade, so they got to get credit for that. But it seems like the type of move that a GM whose contract was going to run up in a year would do, but they just extended him through like 2017, 2018, didn't they?
They did, yeah, and I can tell you exactly who ran the ship on the Scouse hire, and it was not Rod Pettingen. It was Alex Martins. He basically, you know, for whatever you want to read in the media, he basically pulled those levers to get Scouse to come in. That was his hire. You know, Rob Henneken can say that, oh, you know, we as an organization made the decision to hire Scott Scouse because he was the best fit. That's a bunch of BS. It was Alex Martins. He was the guy that wanted Scouse to come in because, again, they tried it Hennigan's way. They tried it with trying to hire Vaughn. It didn't work, and Martins decided to have his way in this coaching round of trying to find somebody. So, you know, by no means was this a Rob Hennigan-led hire, I think.
Did Hennigan have, like, his own guy that he wanted, or have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything that detailed of who Hennigan wanted, but I can more or less guarantee you that Alex Martins got his way, and he got Skiles because that's what he wanted. I think when it comes to coaching, when it comes to coaches in Orlando, and this is something I've learned covering the team over the years, you know, Hennigan's MO, you're not going to hear a lot of rumors. You're not going to hear a lot of things behind the scenes with Hennigan when it involves things that he has control over.
Yeah, he's like he's that OKC
plays
style.
It like, extremely close. Yeah, plays it extremely close to the vest. I think for instance, when Oladipo got drafted, no one had any idea he was going to get drafted. When Aaron Gordon got drafted, no one had any idea.
Yeah, he was a huge surprise.
All those guys are surprises, and that plays extremely to Hennigan's MO, which is he's going to play it close to the vest, he's going to keep it in-house, he's going to really do things his way and not really let it leak. But when it comes for the coaching's perspective, you know, it's not a coincidence that when Stan Van Gundy walked out the door and it was an ugly divorce, Alex Martins was front and center of that entire thing. It's not a coincidence. And again, it's not a coincidence that when Scouse was heavily rumored to be attached to the coaching job, you know, immediately after Jock Vaughn got hired, or I'm sorry, he got fired, that Alex Martins was front and center on that. You know, I'm not dumb, and I think a lot of people within Orlando aren't dumb either, and I know a lot of NBA insiders aren't dumb either as well. Everybody knew that Hennigan likely wasn't pulling the strings on this hire. So, you know, who knows? I'm curious as to who he really wanted, but I think we knew who Martins wanted because he got his guy, and he was extremely excited about it. So we'll see, but that's something that I think knowing how things work behind the scenes in Orlando, that's what led me to just kind of accept the fact that Scouse is going to get hired because that's what's going to happen. I mean, anybody that thought that the Magic were going to hire somebody else outside of Scouse were going to be rudely mistaken because as soon as Vaughn got hired, as soon as he got fired, everybody knew in Orlando that basically that was Scouse's job to lose.
So, like, Martin seems like a little bit of a weird, or Martins, I guess, seems like a little bit of a weird guy going back to the Dwight saga. You know, there's sort of these rumors that he was like begging Dwight to stay, and then, you know, first he was leaving, and then there were all these weird press conferences where, you know, and then they finally convinced Dwight to opt in, and then they ended up trading him anyway. So I don't really know that much about him other than just kind of what was reported with that kind of stuff. I mean, do you believe in him as kind of the president, like steward of the franchise? It seems a little weird to me that he would extend his GM and then overrule his GM on who the coach was going to be and then force his GM to work with the coach. You know, I can't think of – you want to have synergy with your coach, and I can't imagine that, like, that's exactly what Rob Hennigan would have wanted. So I don't know. That all doesn't look good to me. I mean, what do you think of him and the job that he's doing, and can we expect him to kind of be interfering like this throughout?
Yeah, it's tough to say because I think, you know, I am curious to find out if Hennigan was fine with the hire. I suspect he probably was at the end of the game, but it certainly was a Martins play. I think to answer your question, you know, again, with the whole Dwight mare, you know, at the time, Otis Smith was the GM, and at the time, Otis, you know, wasn't the greatest GM in the world. But again, I think that was another Martin's maneuvering, because really, when things started getting leaked out, when the whole Dwight Stan Van Gundy thing was happening, it became clear that, you know, Martin's had some involvement in that, because, you know, over time, as we've seen Hennigan especially just play things close to the vest, and we see certain things trickle out from a coaching perspective, you know, it's not hard to put two and two together. So is he the right guy to let Hennigan have that autonomous, you know, authority that he needs to get this franchise to where it needs to be? I really do think he does. I do think that he has the best interest in mind for the franchise. I just think that there's times where he likes to, you know, influence some of the decisions that are being taken place, you know, from a front office perspective, because, you know, he wants to provide some sort of, you know, impact in that manner. I think from a business perspective, Alan Smartens is a brilliant man. I think from a basketball side, I think he just needs to trust Hennigan to do the job. And I think sometimes...
Yeah, he doesn't have any kind of basketball background.
No, not at all. He started,
I mean,
off...
Now, of course, I don't have a basketball background either, other than having played in high school and watching a ton.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying you can't figure things out necessarily, that should be a death knell for the guy, but it is interesting to see him. He's more of a business background.
Well,
right?
And here's the thing about Martin's that not a lot of people know. He started off in the PR side for the Magic. That was his very first start with the franchise at the onset of the team becoming, you know, real in Orlando back in 1989. You know, that was his first job, was PR. So it's not a coincidence that some of these PR maneuverings and some of these things that trickle out in the media are likely coming from a guy that has a PR background. So, again, I'm not the type of guy that thinks that that's all a coincidence. I think there's a little bit of maneuvering occurring behind the scenes that tries to sway the public opinion to go one way or another. So it should be interesting to see what happens, honestly. I think Hennigan's in a good spot. I think he's done a great job with the team. But I think Magic fans do have a bit of a leeriness with Alex Barnes, and there is a fear that, again, especially with the Scott Skiles hire, that is this going to be the last time he interferes with basketball operations? Because, you know, that's just an example of someone that is trying to get his way and not trusting the GM to really see things through, you know?
Yeah, all right. Well, so we've gotten a bit far afield, but it's been a really interesting conversation. I haven't had a chance to talk to people kind of about what the dynamic is there, so that was actually was really interesting.
So the starting lineup, so, I know you want
yeah,
to
yeah, that's right. Yeah, what I asked you about 10 minutes ago, but I'm glad you took us on that tangent. But yeah, who do you think should start, and who do you think will start?
Sure. So I think who will start will likely be Payton Oladipo, Harris. The four man, honestly, I have no clue. I really don't. I want to.
They can't. They're not going to start Fry again, are they? At the four,
I
really hope they don't.
Don't
do that.
Think so, but it would not surprise me if Skiles does that to start the year, because I have a hard time believing that he's just going to thrust Gordon in as the starting power forward, even though that's what I think he should do. I don't think he will do that. I think Fry will likely start at the beginning of the year, again, just because he's a veteran guy. You know, obviously Skiles likes his veteran guys. So that will likely be the starting lineup. Will be Payton Oladipo, Harris, Fry, and Vucevic, as it was for parts of last season. But what I think the starting lineup should be is Payton Oladipo, Harris, Gordon, and Vucevic. Now, I know I said earlier that I'm not a big fan of Harris starting, but I think what makes this alignment a little interesting is the fact that Gordon's versatility to guard threes really gives Harris that chance to, you know, hide his deficiencies a little bit on defense at the four, you know, because Harris is a big boy, and a lot of these fours in the NBA nowadays aren't exactly the rugged power forwards of yesteryear. I know he's still got a few out there, but for the most part, Harris can handle those guys that, you know, that are a little bit slower afoot, that he can keep in front of them with his strength. Now, for some of the, you know, for the Zach Randolphs of the world, Gordon does have the strength to at least keep himself to you know, stand his ground against those big.
Really, you think so? I don't think I agree with that. I think he's still if he ever, like, a Zach Randolph is huge. I mean, I think Blake Griffin, Zach Randolph, I don't think he can really hold up that well in the post against those guys personally.
Yeah.
But you see it differently, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely understand that point of view. I think my point with Gordon is I think his interchangeability on defense allows for the Magic to plug and play three and fours on defense as needed.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it.
You know, and again, I agree. You know, I'm not saying that Gordon is going to shut down Zach Randolph or Blake Griffin or some of these elite fours. But what I will say is that he's likely a better option than Channing Frye. He's likely a better option than some of these other guys on the bench. I mean, again, Dewayne Dedmon, sure, he can hold his own, but he gives you nothing offensively. At least with Gordon, he can give you a little bit of versatility on offense, you know, with his ability to run the pick and rolls and again, provide a bit of dynamic, you know, play to the four that the Magic need. Now, yes, Channing Frye gives the shooting that they need at the four, but, you know, really, it's hard to say who starts in the four, really, because, you know, everybody has pluses and minuses. And I think at least when you look at the totality of the roster, I think Gordon at least gives you a fighter's chance to do some interesting things at the four.
Yeah, I like him. I mean, and defensively, you know, we were talking about post defense, but his ability to switch,
yep,
his ability to, you know, crash in from the opposite wing on the pick and roll, his ability to protect the rim pretty well. You know, there aren't really that many great fours who can protect the rim, but with his athleticism and quickness, he can have an impact there as well. I think that, you know, in every aspect other than just straight up post up defense, he could be a very good four defensively.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of how I see it. Again, I definitely didn't want to lead you to believe that I expect Gordon to be a shutdown post defender. But again, when you look at what else is on the roster, I mean, honestly, he's
I wasn't saying he wasn't the best option. He might be the best of
for sure. But when you look at the roster, he likely is your best shot. I mean, Vucevic, yeah, he can hold his own in the post, but again, he's a bit of a sieve overall defensively. So I would rather just let Gordon try and see what he can do. And I really do think that Skiles can do some interesting things with defensively, as you mentioned. So, you know, that's what I would like to see in terms of a starting lineup. But again, what I expect to see is likely Frye at the four. But I am curious to see how long that lasts, because I know Frye put in a lot of work in the offseason to really improve his speed a little bit and really try to be more of a mobile four, knowing what his responsibilities are going to be this season. But, you know, unless he has a bit of a watershed, career season at his age, I'm a little skeptical that he'll be able to do that, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, like, what's wrong with having him just be the backup center and letting, you know, Vucevic, you know, centers don't play more than 30 minutes a game. You give him 18 minutes a game as the backup center. That's pretty close to what I think he can handle these days. And I think, you know, having him as a guy who can run pick and pop as a five would really, really help their spacing problems. And then if you have those four guys around Vucevic, those four young guys, this is a team that if they want to be efficient offensively, they're going to have to run.
Yep.
They're going to force a ton of turnovers. They can run off those turnovers. If you have Frye and Vucevic in there, that's really going to kind of limit that. If you have Gordon getting out in transition as the four, they can get a lot of easy buckets because they're not going to have enough shooting probably to score very well against a set defense. You were talking about that being an issue with Vaughn. So, yeah, I think – and then also just to – A, you know, how about you start Gordon, and then he looks a lot better as a trade asset if he's starting, you know, and just I think he's a conscientious enough guy that you don't have to be like, oh, we can't hand him these entitlement minutes that he's not going to earn, because just Frye is just not a good player at the four. I love him at the five, and I hate him at the four.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that's another great point you make about pace. You know, when you look at Payton and Oladipo and Harris and Gordon, and if you start those four guys – you know, again, Vucevic isn't the fleet of foot, but, you know, when you got at least four people, you know, four athletic demons that can all run and spread the floor and really wreak some havoc in transition, you know, they can do some things offensively. I think, obviously, when the half court sets, you know, that lineup is going to struggle immediately. But, you know, again, if they're going to score points this season, they have to run a little bit, you know, especially given the athletes on a roster. And I think, you know, when you take Vucevic out and you put Frye at the five, I mean, you can emulate a lot of what Phoenix did with Frye at the five. I mean, just, again, run those spread pick and rolls. Just run up and down the floor. Play with pace. I mean, you know, really do a lot of interesting things in transition. So, I'm curious to see what they do in terms of Vucevic's backup, because you got Deadman on the roster, who's likely probably one of the better, you know, rim protectors on the team. You know, they did sign Jason Smith, but I don't expect him to do very much.
That was weird. He's really not a good.
And that's the move that puzzled me the most. You know, when we talk about off-season moves with the Magic, you know, obviously people know about the Skiles hire, the Hezonja pick. You know, I thought C.J. Watson was a very smart signing. They finally got a backup point guard that can really both mentor Peyton, but also just play. I mean, C.J. Watson's a good player.
Yeah, and he can at least shoot, you know. And they desperately need that for that position.
Yeah, and Willie Green was a total disaster last year, and they just really – Luke Ridnour was just kind of at the tail end of his career. I mean, they can never find a backup point guard that could really step in and play some adequate minutes. But, you know, not only can C.J. Watson provide you adequate minutes, but, you know, he can play him at the two. You can do some things with him. So – I really like that signing, but, you know, signing and trading Kyle Quinn for Jason Smith just continues to boggle my mind, especially given the contracts that they both got. I mean, very similar deals.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think they just signed Smith straight up in free agency. I don't think he was part of the trade.
But just
to be accurate,
yeah,
since I'm a CPA dork. Essentially, they just swapped those two.
More or less, yeah, apologies.
They're both making $4 million.
Yeah, for sure. Apologies for the confusion there, but... I mean, when you look at, you know, they sign and traded, the Knicks sign and trade Kyle Quinn, and then, you know, the Magic in turn, you know, signed free, Jason Smith outright to try to replace him, you know, essentially swapping the both guys, as you said, apologies for the confusion there. But, you know, when you look at that move in congruence with each other, it's just puzzling that they did that. You know, Kyle Quinn's a really good player, and I think the Knicks are going to be, you know, thrilled with the guy that they get, because I think Kyle Quinn is a very talented, young, athletic big. So, you know, you got him leaving. You know, they gave away Harkless for nothing, which was another puzzling move. Again, you know.
Yeah, can I stop you on that one?
Yes.
Like, what was the story with that? Like, was he just like a miserable person? Like, he's looked great in preseason for Portland. He's still pretty young. I mean, why not just keep him around? Was he just carping because he wasn't? I mean, maybe you just say, all right, he was upset about not playing. They have all these other guys on the wing. He wasn't going to play anyway. Just get him out of here. But, and his value was obviously low enough that they had to just straight up dump him.
Right.
But I feel like that's, you know, all right, even if it got to the point where that was what his value was, that's kind of a failure because this dude can play.
Yeah, that was a disappointing move. I know that, and I don't know too much about the behind the scenes behind that particular move, but what I can say is that, you know, Harkless definitely had the expectation last season that he was either going to start or play significant minutes. When that quickly went away from him at the start of the year, with Jacques Vaughn inexplicably just not playing him for whatever reason, and then with him getting fired and Borrego stepping in and starting to play Harkless a little bit more, but again, probably not to the degree that people wanted to see, because you got to play the guy to make him progress. I really can't say for sure what the behind the scenes reasoning was for him getting let go for nothing, literally nothing. They gave him up for a draft pick, a second round pick that likely will never be seen. So why give up a young talent like that? I have absolutely no idea. And it's puzzling because, you know, Harkless, again, I'm not saying that he's like a game changer by any means, but when you look at the value of 3D guys in this league nowadays, Harkless was starting to look like that type of player, you know, in his second year. You know, he was shooting above average from 3-point range, you know, albeit on some pretty small attempts. You know, he had some really flashes of brilliance on defense. I mean, he's a great cutter. I mean, for a really young player, Harkless is a very intuitive cutter that you just really can't teach in this league. I mean, he reminded me a lot of Matt Barnes in that regard when Matt Barnes played it one year in Orlando. I mean, just Harkless has had a really innate ability to cut and be a smart player in that regard and find points that way. You know, when you got a guy that can do some things, you know, why give him away? It boggles my mind, and I honestly don't have an answer as to why they let him go.
Yeah, I think the failure is more that it got to the point where he had no value.
You know?
And maybe if they had just played him enough last year to where even if he's not in your long-term plans, he's not just looking like a total sunk cost. Maybe you could at least have gotten like a real second rounder for him instead of, you know, a fake top 55 protected second rounder from Portland. But anyway, all right, we're getting far afield again here. I actually think that Fry is almost a better fit at with all these other guys than Vucevic. And if you were to start those four young guys we were talking about with Fry and then really get some spacing for those guys to work, that could open up the floor for kind of those isolations that Harris likes. The impact of Payton's lack of spacing would be muted a little bit. You know, he might be a decent guy to play with Payton in pick and roll, but that's never going to happen because Vucevic is the guy who has the long-term contract, who puts up, you know, the points and rebounds. But I really think, actually, it wouldn't shock me if they play better with Fry on the floor this year than with Vucevic if Fry is being used as a center.
Yeah, for sure, and I definitely don't disagree with that point. It's hard with Vucevic because, you know, he really is a brilliant offensive player, and I understand that he has his deficiencies on defense, which makes it really tough to find the right guy to pair next to him because, you know, again, it kind of goes back to my other point about, you know, some of these other guys like Harris, you know, for as much as they can give you offensively, they take about all that back defensively. And
I think Aaron Gordon at power forward is about as good as you're going to get for a fit next to Vucevic.
Agreed.
Actually.
And that's really the thinking.
Other than maybe the lack of shooting, but defensively for sure.
Totally, yeah. And that was kind of my thought, you know, when I was looking at, you know, what would be probably the best lineup at the Magic, given who they have on the roster, can they throw out there? I think just understanding that they're not going to play Vucevic off the bench and they're going to start him, you know, Gordon is really the only guy that makes the most sense. But yeah, I mean, again, it's your point about playing Fry at the five and pairing him with all these athletes. I mean, it likely wouldn't surprise me either that they would put up some pretty good numbers, you know, and have a really positive net rating when you look at five-man units. Probably is going to happen. I mean, especially given Fry's ability to shoot the ball and be such a matchup nightmare at the five. I think if the Magic really entertain that idea and try to bring in some of the sets that Phoenix really thrived with Fry, you know, before he came over to Orlando, I think they can do some things with him.
Is it possible that Vucevic can get better under Skiles? I mean, why is he so bad? And do you think it's just his physical limitations, or is a lot of it mentality, technique, the type of things that Skiles and his staff might be able to improve?
Yeah, I definitely think it's part technique, part just, again, Jock Vaughn's and Borrego to a lesser extent, their failure to scheme around him. I think, you know, in the NBA, if you have a smart coach that can scheme around a guy like Vucevic, I guarantee you that you can at least turn him into a passable defender. I mean, if you give, you know, I'll give an example of Al Jefferson in Charlotte. You know, I'm not.
Yeah, Vucevic has a lot more tools than Al Jefferson does.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you look at both guys, I mean, they're not exactly, you know, fleet of foot or anything like that. But Steve Clifford was able to build around a good defense with Jefferson as the center. Now, granted, he had Michael Kidd Gilchrist and other guys. But, you know, I think if you have a coach that is able to effectively scheme around Vucevic's shortcomings and mask his flaws, I think you can easily make an average defense, if not better, around him. And him specifically, I think you could turn him into a passable defender. I think it just comes down to scheme and just really teaching him the proper, you know, tools and the, I think that's where Skiles will thrive. And I think honestly, that's why, if there's one of the few things that I like about the hiring, is that if there's any coach that's going to get, you know, guys like Vucevic in the shape where they need to be defensively to at least not be a complete nightmare, a matchup nightmare, you know, I think Skiles can be the guy to really coax that out of them. I think, you know, it's going to be a lot of technique. It's going to be a lot of scheming, you know, trying to find ways to make sure that Vucevic is in the best ways possible to succeed as a defender. Do I think he can get better as a defender? Absolutely. He's still young. And I think with a lot of these guys, you know, especially for you know, people in Vucevic's situation, I don't think it's a lost cause that they can't improve defensively. I think he still has a chance to do some things to improve. So do I expect him to become a Marc Gasol? No, but do I expect Vucevic to have the potential to at least become passable on defense? I do think there's a shot, and I think Skiles can definitely help him in that regard.
Yeah, Vucevic also might be a little overrated offensively because you think of him as a big center. True shooting percentage only a little bit better than the league average, and probably I would guess probably below average for a center. 26% usage, which is crazy. He's a low turnover guy. A lot of mid-range jumpers for him. I would like to see him get on the offensive glass a little bit more, since he's a pretty good defensive rebounder. Only 10% offensive rebound rate. But the really big thing to me that he has to improve offensively is his free throw rate is terrible. 18% free throw rate for a guy with his body, who is supposedly someone who's going to be banging inside and really, you know, taking advantage of some of these smaller centers in the East. That's what I really would like to see more of from him, to get to where maybe he's not using 26% of the possessions when he's on the court. He's more down at 22, 23. But every shot that he takes is a really efficient one. And I don't think he's at that point yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if you get him in the post a little bit more, I think he can do some damage down there, because he's got a really good low post game. He can shoot with both hands. He's got a great left hook, great right hook. You know, he can do some turnaround jumpers. I really do think he can be a really effective role post player if you put him down there and really make him have that be his mindset, because at this point in time, he very much likes pick and pops. You know, he's very much a perimeter oriented player, and I think
he's good at them. Let's not miss that.
You're playing to one of his strengths, but I absolutely agree with you. I think his free throw rate is abysmal for his abilities in the post. I think he has to show an ability to not just play more with his back to the basket, but also being aggressive enough to draw fouls, because that's one of the weaknesses of the Magic as a team. You know, if there's one way you can make up for the fact that they can't shoot, is draw fouls. And, you know, I think the team's inability to do that as a collective, I think, is another weaknesses of theirs. And I think, again, it's going to fall to guys like Vucevic to improve. I think it's going to also fall to guys like Oladipo, Harris, you know, guys that attack the basket, that really go after defenders at the rim, that are willing to throw their bodies out there to draw fouls. I think if the Magic can do that, that will definitely help them out in terms of trying to be more of an efficient offensive team, because they're definitely not going to do it from the perimeter. So if one way they can do it is either in transition or at the free throw line.
Yeah, that's a great point, that these guys just don't get to the line enough. There's nobody on the team last year who had a free throw rate of more than 30%. And the free throw rate is basically free throw attempts to field goal attempts. Peyton was the highest one. He was just over 30%. Everyone else was below that. So, and usually, you know, some of the best scorers in the NBA can get up to 40, 50% free throw rate, especially some of the best big men. And and now that part of the concern there is because there's not that much spacing, so you can't get the kind of penetration that's going to be causing fouls to occur. But still, yeah, that's something that I think they can really improve on. So we talked about that getting to the line is kind of a weakness. What are some of the strengths that you see for this team?
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of strengths, obviously their youth and athleticism is pretty obvious. I mean, it's a very young roster that can fly up and down the court. They can definitely wreak havoc and do some damage in transition if they just, you know, have the coaching to let them be effective, because it just boggles my mind that, you know, there were times last year where they just did not run enough. It just didn't make any sense to me. Their pace was fairly slow. And I do think that they have a chance to do some things defensively. I think if there's one thing that you can guarantee Scouse will improve on is defense. I mean, as you said earlier, he's a proven track record of improving defenses, you know, dramatically. And I think, honestly, I think a strength will be their defense. I mean, you got Ball Hawks with Peyton and Oladipo. You got a guy that's extremely versatile in Gordon that can do some things defensively. You know, again, even though Dedmon isn't exactly the most, you know, he's not a Hakeem Olajuwon on offense, he is an effective defender, and he can definitely help out in that regard. So, you know, they have some able bodies to really, you know, drum up an interesting defensive scheme that it could be very aggressive, you know, depending on some of the players they put out there. Obviously, with Vucevic, they need to be a bit more conservative in terms of how they defend pick and rolls. But, you know, when you have those small lineups and you throw Fry at the five and you can really do, you know, have Gordon out there wreak some havoc with pick and rolls, I think that can make some things interesting. And just in transition, I think they just need to run the ball. And I think Scott Skiles knows that. I think that is one of his strengths also as a coach, is historically his teams have been near the top 10 in pace, you know, for the majority of his career. So even though his teams do struggle offensively, they do at least go out there and run. So I think Scott Skiles will see that this is a team that can turn a lot of defensive opportunities into transition, you know, baskets. So I think in terms of strengths, that really is all they have because their weakness is definitely shooting. I think there's no doubt about that that will continue to be one of their red marks, as well as their inability to really score on half-court offensive sets. I mean, again, they are not going to execute like the Warriors. you know, they are going to struggle in half-court, and, you know, I think that's going to be two of the major weaknesses that they face this season, which was what they faced last season. I think, honestly, even with Skiles on board, and even if they, you know, drum up the pace, and even if they attack the basket more and get to the free throw line, you know, I don't expect them to be anything better than, at the best, you know, a top 20 offensive rating. You know, I just don't, it's hard to see them being anything better than that.
I mean, even with the individual talent, just not having the spacing can really kind of drag things down. Though, you know, it's funny because when we were, you teased us on Twitter beforehand, and I retweeted it that we were going to talk about Hezonja a ton, and we haven't really even talked about him yet. You know, everyone seems to love him as far as being a fun player. Do you think he can really get to the level of being a star? You know, and what is he really going to have to improve to get there? So there, obviously, it's early, but what are you kind of just thinking of him right now at this point?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And in terms of Hezonja, I know that the hype is a little out of control on Twitter. It's funny. but in terms of realistic expectations for him this season, you know, he's going to score. I mean, he really is going to be able to score the basketball, especially from deep. I think he obviously displayed an ability over in Europe to be streaky as a shooter, especially from the three-point line, and I think that's what the Magic desperately need. So
And he can get his shot off, too, at 6'8", as a guy who's got some pretty good bounce to him, and he can make contested shots, and he can get his shot off. Those are things that are and he can shoot off the dribble even as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. I think he'll show his an ability to create off the dribble, to create his own shot. He likely will struggle with efficiency as many rookies do, and you know, and even many young players in the league just struggle overall having, you know, to be efficient. But I think just the fact that he'll be able to spread the floor will be evident right away. You know, it will be interesting to see what Skiles does with him in terms of playing time, because that is one issue that likely will come up this season, because the Magic do have a lot of wing players, and you know, when
we haven't even talked about Fournier.
When he got Oladipo and Harris and Fournier and Gordon, and you know, he got Hezonja now thrown into the mix, it's not a lot of minutes for these guys, and I think I guarantee you Hezonja's playing time is going to be an issue at a certain point because of his defense. I think that will be one of his struggles this season, will be his defense. I think he already showed some signs in the preseason. I know Scott Skiles was very displeased with some of his efforts on defense, which is, again, no surprise given that Hezonja's MO is to score, not to defend. But I do think he has the tools to be a good defender. I mean, he's obviously very athletic. He has great wingspan.
Mike Schmitz was saying from Draft Express, when I had him on prior to the draft, he was saying that he thought Hezonja has great defensive tools, and when he does really try to lock in and pressure the ball, that he can be very successful.
Yeah, exactly. So I really do think in terms of what is Hezonja's ceiling, I think it's really hard to say. I think the Magic are clearly banking on him being a star. I think he obviously has the tools and the potential to be that guy. You know, but in terms of just this immediate season, I think you'll see a guy that will be a bench scorer, a guy that can really be a spark plug off the bench. And who knows, if there is an injury or two, which will likely occur as with many teams in the NBA, you know, there might be those opportunities for Hezonja to fill in as a starter. And, you know, if he gets the playing time and he shows himself well, you know, you never know, he might usurp himself as a guy that makes Harris, a bench player, and he slides Hezonja at the three. You know, because that would be an interesting alignment as the starting lineup, is having Peyton, Oladipo, Hezonja, Gordon, and Vucevic. Because again, you know, Hezonja can do some things defensively that Harris can't do, and quite frankly, Hezonja can do some things offensively that Harris can't do either. So it'll be interesting. I think Hezonja and Gordon, in my opinion, when you look at the totality of the franchise, those are the two X factors, in my opinion, that will define how good this team becomes, because I think we'll see how good Oladipo is. I think I think it's a safe bet that he'll become a two-way star. But really, Hezonja and Gordon are tantalizing talents, and I think that's exactly why Hannigan went after them, because he knows that if there's any way for this franchise to get to where they need to be, they need those, honestly, they need those X factors, those unknowns that you really don't have a ceiling definition on, because maybe they'll play past it. So I think those two guys will be interesting to see how they play this season.
Yeah, Hezonja, for me, I think really his big comp coming out of the draft was J.R. Smith. I think he can become a better defender than him, and he also has more size than he does at 6'8", although he's kind of more shooting guard than small forward at this point, but maybe he can kind of grow into being more of a small forward as he adds strength. I'm not sure that he quite will have the creativity off the dribble. He didn't get to the foul line a lot, you know, since he's on the Magic, obviously, in Europe. And I'm not sure that he has that great of an in-between game yet. So I think he has a lot of skill development to go before you can really kind of think that he is going to be a star type of player that you would think of maybe as being the number five pick. But, you know, I don't think he's probably the guy in the top 10 that I knew the least about. I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. But, you know, I think expecting a lot of him in these first couple of years, other than just hitting some shots and going ballistic from three-point range on occasion, might be a little too much.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that the hype train is a little hot on Twitter, as I said before. I think...
Yeah, he's going to be very entertaining.
Totally.
He's definitely going
to be a vulnerable player, a dude that's going to get you a nice highlight, but...
oh, yeah. I mean, like that bounce pass alley-oop that he had to Gordon the other night was ridiculous.
That will be one of the many highlights, I'm sure, that Hezonja will have for the team this season. But you make absolutely a fair point. I think expecting him to be an immediate star in the league is a little... outlandish. I think it's going to take him some time to feel out the lead, to understand how, you know, defenders are going to play him and vice versa, how he needs to defend NBA caliber players. I think he has a lot of learning to do. But again, I do think that Scott Skiles, in a sense, will help him largely on defense where he needs the most help. And I do think that that's going to be a good sign for Hezonja to be under a coach that can really, you know, show him the proper technique and the you know, the things that he needs to do on the defensive side of the ball that will make him a valued two-way player in the NBA.
All right, give me your predicted record for the Magic this year.
35-47.
Yes, another over.
Yeah, I'm definitely over on them. I really do think that they're going to take a leap this season. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to make the playoffs, but, you know, listen, they underperformed last season. I mean, I think everybody saw that. There was a lot of talent on the roster. Yes, it was young. Yes, it was experienced, but they should have won more games than they did last season. I think it was ridiculous that they didn't even win 30. They're easily a team that can make a leap, especially with Skiles' penchant for doing that as a coach. You know, I think 35 wins is a reasonable thing for them to hit. Best realistic case scenario is, of course, the playoffs. And I really do think they have a shot in the East. You just never know how things will break. In terms of the worst case scenario, likely another top five pick, but I have a hard time believing that they'll be in line for another top five pick. I think they will likely hover around 30, 35 wins this season. But again, if things break nicely and they can, I mean, again, Oladipo is on the precipice of being a star. You know, Harris can certainly improve. Payton can improve. Gordon can improve. Vucevic can improve a lot. I mean, it's a very young roster that does have room to improve. If some of these guys can develop nicely, and if Skiles can really whip them into shape and really transform them into a top 10 defensive team, which I know that sounds crazy, but you know, again, just given Skiles' ability to coach defense and also given the defensive talent on the roster, it's not outlandish.
I think a lot of it just depends on the combinations. Again, like I was talking about the same thing with Zach Harper when we did the Wolves, that there are combinations among this roster that could be pretty good defensively, that even could space the floor adequately, but that they also, on both ends, they have a big investment in a guy, Vucevic, who, you know, until further notice, if he can really improve, maybe he'll get there, but until further notice, he kills your defense because he doesn't protect the rim and he can't play pick and roll defense. And then on offense, they have a big investment in Elfrid Payton, who I think is someone who really kills the offense as well. And, you know, if they were just to have C.J. Watson, kind of a caretaker guy who can hit some threes, I think it wouldn't surprise me if they actually perform much better with him on the floor with some of the starters than they do with Payton. Payton is a more skilled player, has more upside, he's more athletic, better defender, but I just think that his lack of shooting is just really kind of drags everything down in a way that may not be that perceptible when you just look at the box score.
Yeah, for sure, and they definitely have ceilings on both ends of the floor. I think Payton is obvious, as well as Vucevic, and I think that will likely encase them into a very, you know, small window of those 30 to 35 wins that I mentioned. I think, again, if everything breaks nicely, maybe they hit the over on 35 wins, and, you know, maybe flirt with 40, but I think that's a little crazy. But
yeah, what's your absolute like best case scenario for this team? You think they could make the playoffs, or is that just totally out of the
realm? I think the absolute best case scenario is that they can make the playoffs. Yeah, it's maybe an 8 seed. They just sneak right in. I do think that the talent is there for them to make a run. You know, again, you never know how this league takes shape. No one expected the Bucks to take, you know, the lead that they did last season, but they did. Now, again, I'm not comparing the two franchises at all, but just, you know, the scenarios of just saying, you just don't know what team will take that leap. The Magic could be one of those teams. We'll see. It'll be an interesting season. I think, just me personally speaking, I'm very eager to see the development of a lot of these guys because, you know, I think we'll start to get a better sense of not more so how good they're going to be this year, but, you know, 2, 3, 5 years down the road, because, you know, I think at this point in time, it just remains to be seen, like, what's the long-term projection of this franchise? Because really that's the biggest question. I mean, I think everybody understands that they have the young talent, but, you know, what's the big picture? I think that's one of the biggest question marks in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing is how these young guys develop, whether they can start to add skills, whether it's Payton and Gordon shooting, whether it's Oladipo becoming like a real advanced guy in the pick and roll, whether it's Vucevic improving defensively, whether it's Harris improving defensively or starting to get to where he can space the floor reliably from not only just the corners but the top of the arc. These are all the questions that I think are going to be really important to answer, because if these guys can't all make significant additions to their skill set, then there are going to have to be some trades. Even if they have a lot of these guys as good players, they're just not going to fit together in the long term for this franchise.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see how they develop. I know Hennigan is gambling, and I'm using that word aggressively because it really is gambling that these guys will fill in the missing holes in their games to be the guys that they can potentially be, you know, shooting being the biggest question mark for many of these players. He's gambling, and I think really when you look at where the franchise is, he needs to make those gambles because they're not going to sign anybody in free agency. You know, they're not going to be able to be one of those teams that can just rebuild on the fly. They need to take some of those risks that you need to take as a franchise in a small market to really try to get the franchise to championship contention, which, you know, they were just, you know, a couple years ago. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting season for sure. But I do think that the front office understands that, you know, this is the year that they need to make progress, because I think 3 years of rebuilding is long enough. I think fans in Orlando are very antsy to see this team start winning ball games. I think it's cute to have all these young players, but it's starting to become a point where they need to see some results. And I think, you know, me as just, you know, as an observer of the team for the past several years, I it's a little hard to just watch the slogs of these 25 win seasons. It'd be nice to see some progress made. So I think that's the expectation both internally with the organization, but also externally with the fan base.
Yeah, my prediction for this team, I would say 27, 28 wins is kind of what I would see. I think, but I certainly acknowledge that there is a very good possibility that could be incorrect. I still worry so much about these pieces fitting together. But if Skiles can make the defensive improvement that we've seen than with other stops, whether it's Chicago, Phoenix, Milwaukee, then, yeah, I think that he can be maybe get this team up into that 35-win range that you're talking about. I got to believe it when I see it with guys like Harris and Vucevic, and then offensively with guys like Payton and Gordon before I can really buy in on that score. But all right, was there anything else about the team that you kind of had an observation you wanted to talk about before we go?
Yeah, no, for sure. I know that one of the last things you were hoping to chat about was just kind of, you know, what grade would we give the Magic over the past 5 years since the current regime has taken, you know, its stance on taking its, you know, shape. I would like to comment on that because I do think it's an interesting thing to discuss, you know, because again, and, you know, we're in year four of the Magic rebuilding. And, you know, I think fans in Orlando are very curious to see, you know, where is this franchise going to go? Because for as talented of a front office the Magic have, and I think they actually do have one of the more talented front offices in the NBA, and when you look at Hennigan as a GM, but also Matt Lloyd and Scott Perry, who are excellent assistant GMs, who I strongly believe will have an opportunity to be GMs down the road. You know, when you look at the totality of what they've done with this roster since the Dwight Howard trade in 2012, you know, personally, I would give them about a B-minus. If I had to grade them so far on their performance, I think when you look at how they've rebuilt the roster, certainly they've acquired a lot of young talent. They've done it the smart way. They've built through the draft. They've made some savvy trades. I think, you know, probably the best trade that Hennigan has made is not just the Dwight Howard trade that resulted in Vucevic and Harkless before he got let go, and Aflalo, who also got let go but turned into Fournier. And eventually Payton, because that was one of the picks that also came over, but also the Tobias Harris trade. I mean, just being able to snag a guy with some
That was a fleecing,
just a fleece of a trade that
for like 2 months of JJ Redick.
Exactly.
To Milwaukee.
I think, you know, those are some of the moves that, you know, for a franchise in this position that is trying to rebuild and trying to get the franchise back to where they want to be. I think, you know, taking advantage of those moves, I think, speaks highly of Hennigan's ability to really find those opportunities. Now, you know, again, the Kyle Quinn thing and Maurice Harkless, I mean, letting those guys go continue to puzzle. So that's one of the reasons why I kind of give a red mark to Hennigan's job there. And also just missing on the Vaughn hiring. I think when you look at Jacques Vaughn and just the fact that the Magic took a risk, instead of hiring a retread, which is what a lot of these NBA teams do, they decided to go after that up-and-coming assistant on the pretense that he could turn into that star coach. They missed, and, you know, that happens. You know, I think that just is part of the game. I think there's nothing wrong with the approach. I think what makes it a little puzzling is that, as you said earlier when you were talking about the Skiles hiring, why didn't they try again? I think, again, that came back to just Martin's trying to cover himself. I think understanding that, you know, we can't miss twice. But in all intents and purposes, I think had the Magic gone after a younger coach that was sought after instead of Skiles, that would have been great. But I think understanding the context of where they came from with Vaughn, I think crystallizes a little bit better of why they made the decision that they make. And lastly, I think the Skiles, the hiring, it could very well backfire. We know how this story ends. He's going to get fired. So, you know, it remains to be seen if Skiles is the right coach for this roster. Can he coax out the offense? Can he figure out the offense? Can he coax out the defense that, you know, these players have the potential to be, you know, good defenders? I mean, there's a lot of question marks with this roster, and I'm not too sure Skiles is exactly the best fit of a coach to answer some of those questions. I think if you were to have a guy like, you know, Stan Van Gundy, he could obviously figure it out, but Skiles has his limitations. For as well as he is a defensive coach, he's never been strong on offense, and he's being handed a very difficult, almost a calculus test when it comes to how to figure out how to get a decent offense out of his roster. So there'll be a lot of question marks, you know, for him to determine whether or not he can do the job that's expected of him. So I think, yeah. If we're talking about, you know, what are some things to look at in terms of the franchise overall, I think really just looking at where they are now and looking at where they're trying to get to, I think is a fascinating discussion and something I wanted to quickly add.
Yeah, you know, most of the micro moves have worked out. You talked about getting Harris basically for, you know, J.J. Redick those last 2 months of him, and then Milwaukee didn't even re-sign him. That was pretty good, right? You know, the Aflalo acquisition and then trading him away, I think, worked out pretty well. But then there also are some kind of puzzling things. The Harkless trade, the O'Quinn, and, oh, gosh, I can't remember. There's one other one that I thought was, like, really weird, and now it's escaping my memory. But, yeah, the coaching hire is another one. Ultimately, they have a lot of these pieces now, but the fit is really questionable. And maybe the strategy is that they're going to make some moves. You know, I think it's kind of harder to do that, especially if you're going to aggregate these guys for some older talent. Oh, the Ben Gordon signing. That was just totally weird. Just
yeah, spend, you know, I understand. I'll quickly interject there, and I'm not defending the signing by any means, because I just find it funny that the reaction was so negative last season when it happened. I'm quoting. Yeah,
I mean, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, it didn't matter. They had to pay. They had to reach the salary floor. I mean, they had it was a 1 year deal. He didn't really do much, and then he left. Like, it's fine. It was just puzzling at the time. I don't mean to harp on
it. Totally, yeah. It was definitely a puzzling move, but I remember laughing last season during the offseason, because I remember Matt Moore, especially from CBS Sports, he was just railing the signing, and I was just like, it's a one-year deal. It's not going to do anything. Like, yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but at the same time, it's not going to hurt the team. But anyways.
Yeah, there's an opportunity cost to that move, yeah, but it's probably not worth harping on too badly.
But, yeah, you make some fair points. I mean, again, I think there's a lot of micro things that Hennigan has done well. But from a macro strategy, there's still very many question marks. And I think at this point in time, you know, what the franchise has clearly done is just try to accumulate talent. I think now they're trying to figure out, how does this talent fit? And if it doesn't fit, how do we move this talent to get the talent that does fit?
And it's also interesting, too. I mean, this team is not going to have any cap space really this summer compared to the rest of the league. If they are to kind of blow up, they wouldn't necessarily be able to add another piece. Not that there's a ton of room on the roster for them. And the other thing that kind of sticks out to me is certain players on this team I don't really like as much as they do. And I might be right. They might be right. But they really put a lot of stock in Elfrid Payton. First, they passed on Dante Exum, who I thought it was better than Gordon. They should have taken
pick.
Now that he's torn his ACL, we're not going to find out about that or not.
That's a shame.
But they did that.
He was definitely my pick. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. Didn't they do that though? Because they figured, all right, we're going to get Payton. But everyone knew then that they wanted Payton. That was one of the times when it kind of got out what they wanted to do. So then Sam Hinkie took him and basically held them hostage and got a pick back for him. So they invested now another future pick, I think a 2017 pick. In addition to that 10th pick or their 12th pick in 2014 to get Payton. And now then this year, because they already had Payton, they passed on Emmanuel Mudiay, who I think is going to be way better than Payton. And they took Hezonja, and I think Mudiay is probably going to be better than Hezonja is going to be. Not that I think Hezonja will be bad, but I think Mudiay looks like he's going to be awesome.
He looks special.
You know, obviously it's all way too early for this, but I think they made this big investiture in Payton, and as a guy who just cannot shoot the ball at all, and the likelihood is he probably is not really ever going to get to be even an average shooter, that is a lot of decisions that you made because you really believed in this guy, and I'm not sure that I am nearly as high on him as everyone else seems to be.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And I think with Payton in particular, as you said, the Magic really did throw a lot of eggs in the Payton basket to get him. And that is actually another one of the moves that is a fair thing to bring up when it comes to critiquing Hennigan's moves over the years. It did surprise me that, A, the Magic passed on Exum, because I also was high on Exum. Again, it's a shame that he tore his ACL because
And Aaron Gordon is probably going to end up being better than him now, it looks like.
For sure.
We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, what happens when Exum gets back, but Gordon has looked pretty good. He has fixed his free throw shooting and looks like he's going to get to be a passable shooter, which were probably the biggest two concerns I had with him. So he's on the right track for sure.
Yeah, he's going to be in the right direction, but just, you know, taking a look at understanding where Oladipo was in his development stage, like he just felt as if Exum was a perfect fit next to Oladipo. You know, it's a give and take thing. I think obviously Henke did a great job, and this is probably one of the few missteps that Hennigan has made as a GM, as you alluded to, of just picking Peyton and putting him hostage because he knew that the Magic were extremely high on him and just taking advantage of the situation. I think that's one of the few instances where Hennigan really got bested by a GM, and that there hasn't been many of those. So you're right. I mean, they are putting a lot of stock into Peyton, and it really says a lot about their belief that he will be a star. And could he be? Potentially, but they're really putting a lot of faith in him, and that's a dangerous game to play for a guy, as you said, that cannot shoot in an NBA era where you have to shoot. So it's an interesting dichotomy that's taking place.
And if the philosophy is, hey, we don't really care about fit, let's get as many assets as we can, then why not just take Moutier even though you already have Peyton? You know, I mean, I think maybe that would upset some people, but if you're just going to say, I mean, they have a ton of redundancies already. But, you know, I mean, I guess they probably just, you wonder how much of the taking Hezonja was, we think he's better than Moutier, and how much of it is, hey, we don't need a point guard, we already got Peyton. You know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. It will be an interesting season this year. I think the Magic will definitely, I think internally, start to figure out who will actually be the players that they want to build around, because I think the past few seasons has been spent trying to figure that out, and I think this is finally going to be the season where they start getting some answers. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
All right, well, thanks so much for coming on. Where can we follow you on Twitter?
ERivera7. I will never go away. I'll always be around providing Magic insight as always.
What does the 7 stand for?
That's my favorite number.
Ah, excellent. All right, well, thanks so much for coming on, dude. We really appreciate it.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Nate. It's a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm happy that I was able to join you.
All right, so you can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. My Facebook page is a good place to keep up with my writing. That's NateDuncanNBA as well. If you are enjoying the podcast and would like to support it and help us keep this project going, which has been a lot of fun, and maybe if you know, probably if you, even if you don't support me, I'll probably keep it going anyway. But it would be nice to you know, have the podcast continue to grow. You can use the cap space code on DraftKings or SeatGeek to sign up. SeatGeek, with the NBA season starting, is a great way to get your tickets. And also tell a friend about us. That's appreciated. Or tell a virtual friend via Twitter or maybe with an iTunes rating or ranking. So thanks so much to Eddie for coming on. We will talk to you all next time.